Welcome back to the Rob O'Donnell Show on WILK News Radio, 103.1 FM, 910, 980 AM, or anywhere on that free Odyssey app. It is 409, 78 degrees on this Thursday, May 1st, 2025, and I have some great guests in the studio for you today. They run a family farm here in Northeast Pennsylvania, Applewood Farms. They're my neighbors, to be honest with you. Well, their cows are my neighbors, but they live in the same area as me, and they got a bunch of stuff to talk about. And we're going to talk about farming, locally sourced goods, the generational, how, you know, I say quite often, and again, we have Allison Nogan here. We have her brother-in-law, Dave, and his wife, Mary Beth Nogan. So yeah, I say quite often, no one works harder than the American farmer, the American rancher, and I see it each and every day. I see you guys, and Dave, you said, you know, you literally drive by my house on a tractor every day. Tell us about the farm. Tell us about what you guys do, how the generations have come up. You know, I know your father-in-law, you know, we've spoken on the phone. I've seen him when he used to farm the land. Now he's kind of, you know, backing off a little bit, but I'm sure still has a hand in everything.
Yeah, absolutely. And thank you so much, Rob, for having us today, by the way. We're very excited to be here. So for those of you that don't know me, I married into it. So I married into the family. My mother and my father-in-law started the farm back in the late 80s, and it's really interesting. They always had the drive to go back to agriculture, and I always love to tell the story. They started off with a cow and a calf, and you know that passion and that drive, it just grew from there. And as the years go on, our family got more and more involved with beef, raising the Black Angus, as you know, just getting more and more involved with what we're doing, and farming full time. And Dave, would you like to touch a little bit more on that? Because,
yeah,
you know, having grown up in that, of
like,
course.
Like a lot of farms, if you didn't start out as a farming family and don't have it in your background, most people start slow. My parents came, they wanted to move to the country to get away. My dad knew a little bit of looking at, my mom had a little farming in her family way in the back, and he loved to go there, loved to see it, loved to do it, and wanted that. So they moved up out of like the suburbs, you could kind of say, like urban developments and that, and moved up and bought the property that they currently reside at now, and had a couple cows, worked off the farm for the first 15 or so years, and kept growing it and growing it. And then finally he was able to, it got big enough that he could move into it full time, and left his job in the automotive industry. And
how many brothers are there? There's you, there's...
So there's me and my brother Ben, and we kind of grew up, I always wanted to be involved in agricultural farming when I was a kid. When my brother was younger, he wasn't interested until he got out of high school and then started doing more with everything. He was actually wanted to be a teacher, and then when he got out of college, he decided he wanted to come back full-time too.
Did they start with milkers, or they went straight for beefers with Black Angus?
So we started straight with beef. That's kind of, it's really hard to get into milking, a lot harder than beef nowadays, because it's dairy is such a full-time commitment. You can't do it on the side as well.
Yeah. And you have a marketing background, and you kind of married into a farm, and that, you know, that brings us into this next venture where you're locally sourcing beef.
Yes.
You know, you have your stand now, and it's doing real well. I guess where I get my beef from, that's where we see each other every now and then if it's not on the road. But there's nothing like locally sourced beef and pork. You know, my family, having three children, we used to get a half a cow every spring, and we got a whole pig in the fall, from different areas, from local farmers, from locally sourced beef. And I cannot explain the difference to people, especially from, you know, the suburbs or urban city people who've never had fresh meat, the difference in it. Like, I do not like a big ham roast, but from my pig, I loved it. You know, we couldn't get enough of it because it's just different. You know, the fat on a strip steak from your place or any place that you get locally sourced beef, you know, it just melts in your mouth. It's not that chewy gristle that you get when you get a store-bought because, again, going through all the processes, the chemicals, you know, where, how it was raised, what it was fed on, and such like that. So,
yes, absolutely. I know I can touch onto it, what we're talking about at the moment. And Dave has... I'm sure he can jump in at any point as well. But I know everybody does a wonderful job working with our animals. My brother-in-law, Dave, my husband, Ben, the rest of the family, everybody is really involved with our herd. And just knowing we have all of those years of experience working with Black Angus and working in agriculture. And not everybody knows our full backstory, but before we had the market, we've been raising beef for quite a long time, and we also used to sell commercially. So with time, we really were able to finesse how we feed the animals to get that excellent product. And so I will say we are known for our marbling. We are known for our flavor. And Dave, however you would like to delve into this, but just being, you guys are so involved with our herd from day one. I mean, you know everything about these animals.
So with beef, we believe feeding them correctly for a long period of time is what helps us get so much flavor into that steak. And there's a lot of science behind it, but in general, that's what it takes. Is it takes a lot, and you got to do it precisely, and then you want to send the animal when they're ready. You don't want to send them early, and you don't want to send them late. And one of the things about us being a little bit bigger than the small backyard producer is we have appointments scheduled out, and we always are sending them when they're ready. We're not trying to fill an appointment early or hold one longer, so that they're always going when they're in their prime.
And living next to one of the leases, literally right next door to me, you know, I how many head do you have at the Kovalevichs usually? You know?
So usually at that one farm, we have about 80 head over there. That's where we run cow-calves, and that's basically the factory to make more beef. And then we bring them home to my parents' farm, and that's where we raise the beef animal that's going to end up at the market.
Yeah, that's where you have the big chute in the back and everything that's been built there. Now, there, I mean, the calving season, you know, as my children grew up, we always loved that because as they drove by, it was like, oh, look, they have new calves here and there. And then you have to watch the pen the bulls in every now and then because he can get a little nasty. But, you know, you guys hay that land two, sometimes three times. And you're getting, you know, you're not only working that land with cattle, you're also haying it and storing it for the winter to feed them. And I see you guys up there all throughout the winter dropping the hay bales, spreading them down the hills. And it's just, it's great to see.
We enjoy doing it as well.
Yeah, so nutrition-wise, you know, I notice the difference right off the bat. I taste the difference. My wife, you know, there's meat in a store that I won't buy, even good cuts of steak that I just won't buy because of they're just not to the quality that I like. I have not never gotten a bad cut of meat from you guys or any locally sourced farms. How does that process happen? How is it so different? Is it a time thing? Is it the way they're fed? Is it the, you know, how they're processed? You know, how come the fat on your steaks literally melts and, you know, the store-bought fat, you're chewing on it and basically really can't even consume it. You're just cutting it off and leaving it on the side.
A big part of that reason we don't get the credit for, a lot of that goes to the butcher. They, when we send animals, they're dry-aged for 14 days or so before they're butchered, whereas most commercial beef is only aged for a day because they got to move it through the line. And that really helps kind of get everything to melt together and give you that experience that makes the difference between a store-bought prime steak and a steak you would get from us that's also prime. The animal, when we used to send them that way, is the exact same animal, but that aging makes the difference.
Yeah, and just having a half a cow done myself for years, it takes time to know what you want more of, what you want less of, what cuts you want, what cuts you don't want. You know, my wife would say, you know, we really don't use a lot of that. Don't get that anymore. Get something else done. So that's a great. And you guys have a big selection of that, you know, at your shop.
Absolutely. Like I said, Rob, at the beginning, we started off doing commercial and then moved more into private sales. And we still do a lot of larger orders, like you said, the quarter, half, and full steers. And then when we put up the market, we expanded into the individual retail cuts. But it's all the same selection. So anybody that walks in into our market, they're going to have the same selection of cuts to pick from. You know, if they want a pack of ground beef or if they want a ribeye steak, we have everything out available for them to choose from. But it's nice to have that option as well because, you know, if there's a smaller family or maybe the kids aren't living at home anymore, so sometimes they might be looking for different quantities.
What's the most popular cut that you see people looking for of beef? Which side of steaks? New York strip steak is probably not the best cut, but it's one of my favorite.
I will tell you that one of our most popular cuts, because I'm in the market, and they are so good, the ribeye.
Yeah.
Hands down.
All right. As far as you being a farmer, what's your favorite cut of the
I'm more of a porterhouse guy.
Porterhouse. All right. Mary Beth, you have anything to add to
here? Sure. So just some background on myself. So I grew up on a dairy farm, and that's kind of how I met Dave, was through the farming industry. So going into beef, you know, was kind of like a second nature to me. I'm a registered dietitian, so I talk about beef nutritionally a lot to people all the time. I think it has a bad reputation, you know, for being, you know, not so good for our health and cancer-causing and things like that, and those are just all myths. Beef obviously can be part of a well-balanced diet.
And like everything else, everything in moderation is good for you, but it's not the bad thing they make it out to seem. I mean, that's what genetically, that's what we're made to live off of, to be
absolutely.
Honest with you.
Absolutely.
You know, we're carnivores. We're meat eaters. Nutrition-wise, being a nutritionist, what's the difference that you see in homegrown, locally sourced produce and beef compared to store-bought or things that have gone through a whole processing chain?
Sure, absolutely. So number one, we know exactly what our cows are eating. We grow, I would say, 95% of what we feed our animals, so it comes right from our own land. And also, it's not going through that transportation process of going, you know, from the factory to the grocery store to your house. It's frozen right away, so the nutrients are, you know, preserved that way, and then they're not lost, you know, during that transition period.
As far as stressing the animals, does that have anything to do with you know, how they produce? Like you said, they're all local. I mean, you might be taking them from the farm next to me down to your house, which is a mile and a half away, but they're really not on this long highway drive anywhere.
That definitely can play a factor. If you send them, they can get stressed out, and they'll actually become what's called a dark cutter, and you lose a lot of value when you have a steer that does that. Luckily, most of our steers don't have to go more than 2 miles from the house. A lot of them start over by Rob, come 2 miles to us, and then to our home farm to the store we sell them at. In between that is actually the butcher shop where most of them get done.
Okay. Yeah, so everything's right there in at least a 3 mile square radius. So that's great to see. Altogether, how many head do you guys raise a year?
Right now we have about 250 head, and it varies largely depending on the year. Right now we're in the middle of calving season, so in the next month or so we'll have 40 more.
Now, genetic-wise, do you have your own studs? Do you bring in studs from other farms? Do you keep your bulls and rotate them somehow? How does that work?
So we always like to get good bulls. They say cow's half your calf, a bull's half your herd. So we go out and we select good bulls from across the state, bring them back, and we run like 3 or 4 different herds. So usually you have to replace a bull every 2 years before his daughters get old enough. But we could move them around to other herds, and we'll keep a good bull 6-7 years and get a little more value out of them that way.
And as far as calving season, you know, it looked like it was a really good one this past year. How does that work? Do you have a very successful where most cows have at least a calf, or how's that broken down?
Yes. Yeah, so being that we're full-time farmers, we're always there. Somebody's always able to look at them. Mm-hmm. It's really hard when you're a solo farmer and you have to go to work during the day. We're out there. We take care of them. This year, it's been nice. We like to calve outside in the grass when we can. When the weather gets bad, we'll bring them in so they don't have to be out there in that weather the first couple days. But if we can, we like to have them out there in the fresh pastures. Seems to keep them a little healthier.
And speaking to your dad today, he was pretty happy with the winter we had this year. Not too much snow, not too much stress on him. It was cold, but you know, not too hard on him.
No, correct.
Yeah. I'm getting a text message in saying I have two strip steaks and ground in my cooler from Applewood and apple pie from Miller's Orchard, keeping it all local. So that's one of the text messages we
Very
got
good.
In.
Awesome.
So again, we're speaking to the family from Applewood Farms up in Scott Township. We're going to be back with them after the break. We'll be back. Welcome back to the Rob O'Donnell Show on WILK News Radio. Again, we're in here with Applewood Farms up in Scott Township. Allison, Dave, and Mary Beth Nogan. You guys got an event this Saturday and Sunday up at your farm market.
Yes, absolutely. We're very excited. We hope to see everybody out there. It's going to be this weekend, Saturday, May 3rd, and Sunday, May 4th. And the hours are online, but 10 to 4 on Saturday, Sunday from 10 to 2. We have a lot of fun stuff planned. Throughout each day, we're going to be serving samples of our products. So we don't have a set schedule at that, so definitely make sure to stop out. We're going to have lots of tasty stuff to try. We're going to have some fun activities for the kids, some games. Mary Beth is going to have some fabulous information about beef nutrition and awareness. One of the big reasons that we're having our event this weekend, I definitely want to point out that May is National Beef Month, too, so we're also excited about that.
Yeah, I'm just looking now. Beef Nutrition and Awareness, games, local vendors, appearances by the Scott Township Fire Hose Company. And you're at 53 German Farm Road in Scott Township.
Yes.
Kind of a little ways to go around, but if you put that in, they should be able to find it.
Oh, yes, no problem. We're on Facebook. We're on Google. Another great reason to stop by on Saturday and Sunday, we are happy to be supporting the fundraiser for Scott Township Fire Hose Company. So they are holding a fundraiser right now. It's called Get Your Beef On. So like I said, we're happy to be supporting that for them. They have some great prizes that they're raffling off. So we're going to be selling tickets for that at our open house as well.
And again, that's Saturday, May 3rd from 10 to 4, and Sunday,
Correct.
May 4th from 10 to 2.
Yes.
I'll be there one of those days, one of those times. I'm not sure. I'm going to stop in and make sure we get some stuff there. My daughter's in, so we're going to bring her up. And you also have crafts and other goods in there. You have locally sourced honey and stuff like that
yes,
in the shop,
we
too.
Have all of the products that we have in our shop, they're either have a local connection to us or something that we're really passionate about.
All right. Again, it's I just shared your open house and your Facebook page on mine. So all the listeners out there, if you go to my Facebook, Rob O'Donnell on Facebook, you could follow Applewood Farms, the Nogans, their Facebook page. And I recommend you do. And you could see their flyer for their open house this weekend, Saturday, May 3rd, Sunday, May 4th, 10 to 4 on Saturday, 10 to 2 on Sunday. And you have both indoors and outdoors, so even if it's a little dreary outside, you can still come inside the shop, look
rain
around.
Rain or shine, we will be there. And you know what, Rob? We'll also have a cotton candy machine, so you'll have to get some free cotton candy while
there
you're up.
There you go. Cotton candy says it all. Well, listen, I thank you all for what you do. I mean, we don't eat unless there's people like you out there in America. And the fact that this is passing from generation, from your dad to you guys and the wives that you married into this who are embracing this lifestyle. It's not easy. You know, I see you guys from first thing in the morning till late at night. You know, if we're driving down the road and one of the calves get through the wires, you guys are there in 8 minutes, you know, to make sure that these calves are taken care of. And that's the only way this food gets to the stores is because of the work you do. So I want to thank you, as a consumer of beef, or as a lover of beef, and all farmers and ranchers across America, because it's truly some of the hardest work I've ever seen done in my life. And I've seen some pretty hard work.
Absolutely. Thank you.
All right. We'll be back. It's time for the news with Paul Michaels. Welcome back to the Rob O'Donnell Show on WILK News Radio. And keeping it in our area, that's a song from a friend of ours, Nate Hosey, who also lives in Scott Township. He's got a show on the Outdoor Channel, Headhunters. Gave us the permission to use that song for this event, where we honor our heroes across America who made the ultimate sacrifice on this day. Thankfully, on this day, I have no one to report in Pennsylvania in law enforcement who made the ultimate sacrifice on this day. So hopefully we can keep it that way. I enjoy every time I can say that. It just means one less tragedy in the world. On this day, it was interesting, having them in, and truly great people to see them, work that land each and every day from my window, from my front lawn, to hear the cows all throughout the night and during the day, and it's just coming from being born and raised in New York City, and 21 years ago moving to where I moved to, having this type of farm right next door to me is just exactly what I wanted to assimilate to. And, you know, I was telling him a story about 10 years ago. I was coyote hunting up on the fields, one of the fields where they keep these cows. And they were in another section of the field, so I did not see them. And I got set up. It was just before, you know, just before dusk by about an hour, you know, set up, wait till the coyotes start running around. And I was in the tall grass, probably up to my neck. And I had my shooting sticks in front of me and my 25-06 for, you know, for coyotes. And I let out a coyote call. And these herd of cattle, maybe 30 of them, came charging with their calves and all, came charging around the corner and up the hill. And probably about 50 yards from me, they stopped. And they're looking around because I guess they thought there was a coyote there. They had calves, and they were going to chase it off. And I sat there, and it was like, oh, man, what did I just do? And thankfully, they didn't see me. They didn't see any threat. So they kind of meandered back to where they came from. And I just sat there. I was like, I'm not going to make that call again. So I'm just, listen, cows, I've hunted a lot of farms with dairy cows and Black Angus and beefers. I just don't like and I'm uncomfortable about anything that's bigger than me. Listen, I don't care how docile you are. I don't care how many times you want to hear, you know, something's, you know, possibly a dumb animal. I don't even know if I trust that, but you're bigger than me. You outweigh me by hundreds of pounds. You win. It's as simple as that. It's as simple as that. So that was one of the stories from up there at that farm. And it's interesting because during calving season, you know, they're a lot smaller. Sometimes they get through the four wire fence and out into they usually stay on the grass just on the other side of the fence, but they could wander onto the road. And, you know, sometimes they're in the road and you know, I'll give them a call and say, hey, you know, one of the cows are out on the road and, you know, I'll just stick around, make sure no cars come zipping by. You know, we live on a rural road, so there's really not fast traffic coming by. So you're gonna see a cow, at least hopefully. And like I said, they're there in minutes. You know, they gather it up, get it back in. If it's a little calf, they'll pick it up and just put it back in. But, you know, watch those wired fences, this electrified fences. They wake you up in the morning. They will indeed. But one of the things I enjoy about living here, and I've lived here for 21 years and wouldn't change it for a thing. And it's interesting because, like I said, you know, I see them drive by on their tractors, on their balers, and every day, depending on what kind of work they're doing. But good times. And like I said, when they were here, we wouldn't eat if it wasn't for them. And they are dwindling in numbers greatly. The next generation is not taking on farmers, not taking on farming. They're selling property for subdivisions. But to see people who are passionate about it and love it and have married women into their lives that are embracing that and growing the business in different avenues, listen, I respect that as much as I respect anything else. I give them all the credit in the world because it is not an easy lifestyle. Then you juggle kids and everything we do, running from sport to sport and homework, and then you're working a farm for 14, 16 hours a day. Not a lot of people will do that. And I'm just thankful and thank God every day there's people that do. It's 4:41 here at WILK. Time for 2020 traffic okay, and weather together. Right.
Thanks, Rob. My goodness, there is some nasty backups to go.
Welcome back to the Rob O'Donnell Show on WILK News Radio. It's time for Today in History. Because how do we know where we're going unless we remember where we've been? On this day, May 1st has been a pivotal date in U.S. history, marked by significant events spanning labor movements, civil rights, political milestones. Here's an overview of some of the notable occurrences on this day. Some labor and workers' rights, 1889, May Day, designated as International Workers' Day, commemoration of 1886, Haymarket Affair in Chicago, International Federation of Socialist Groups and Trade Unions designated May 1st as a day to support workers' rights. 1894, May Day riots in Cleveland. Didn't take long, huh? Amid the economic downturn or the panic of 1893, unemployed workers in Cleveland protested against inadequate relief measures, leading to violent clashes with police. It's always the police's fault, isn't it? 1916, May Day parade in New York City. Employees of the Puritan Underwear Company participated in May Day workers' parade, highlighting the 20th century labor activism. Hopefully they did not wear their product and covered up. Political and military events. 1970, U.S. troops invade Cambodia. On May 1st, President Nixon announced the expansion of the Vietnam War into Cambodia, sparking widespread protests across the United States. 1971, May Day protests in Washington, D.C. Over 40,000 anti-Vietnam War protesters gathered in the Capitol, leading to mass arrests and significant civil unrest. I guess that insurrection was okay. Cultural and historical milestones. 1931, a dedication of the Empire State Building. The iconic 102-story skyscraper in New York City was officially dedicated, becoming a symbol of American innovation and ambition. 1958, first observance of Law Day. President Eisenhower proclaimed May 1st as Law Day to honor the role of law in the creation of the United States, providing an alternative to the international labor celebrations. 2025, nationwide May Day protest. Activists across nearly 1,000 U.S. cities are organizing demonstrations focusing on workers and immigrants' rights. What they mean is workers and illegal immigrants' rights, with significant events planned for cities like Los Angeles, New York, and Chicago. I haven't seen much on it. I'm sure there's something going on out there. It's amazing. It's amazing how they opened the floodgates for millions of illegal immigrants with no process, and now they want all the due process in the world in order to send them back where they came from. But that's May 1st, yeah, and I want to add one more here on a personal note from a personal friend that I'm honored to call a friend. Today is the day that the world was rid of Osama bin Laden. Yep. Members of our DevGru, otherwise known as SEAL Team 6, including Rob O'Neill, a friend of mine, were on a mission to eliminate Osama bin Laden. That mission was successful. I've heard some firsthand accounts of the removal of Osama bin Laden from this earth, and thankfully that was done. A little justice in the world, especially someone as a survivor of 9/11. What was interesting is you know, if you've seen the movies of that incident and the CIA operative who remained on his trail, who pushed the director of the CIA, who then pushed the military that she was right, and that he was at this location and was passionate about pushing and pushing and pushing and not afraid to take a back seat to pushing that narrative. Thankfully, they did listen to her, and she was there. She was at the camp when they left to take out Osama bin Laden, and she was there when they got back. She is the one who did give positive ID to Osama bin Laden, that actually did take place. What's not said a lot is that the Navy SEAL who shot Osama bin Laden when he got back took out his magazine from his M4 and handed it to her and said, "You're going to want to keep this." For her job, for her passion, for what she did for America, unsung. To this day, it's not widely known who she even is. But if it wasn't for her persistence, and I've gotten this firsthand from the team guys who did this mission, if it wasn't for her persistence, her arrogance at sometimes, and her demanding that leadership, and by leadership, I even mean the President of the United States, listen to her. Listen to the intelligence that she gathered. Listen to the theories that she built. Enough probability to where they risked going into a friendly nation with a combat force. Under the cloak of darkness, radar jamming, and then had the tragedies take place of the helicopter going down, a top secret helicopter that had to be destroyed, which was not fully destroyed. And then have Pakistan scramble fighter aircraft because of this incursion, only to be warned off by our fighter aircraft, said, "This is not the fight you want. Stay away. Stay out of it." So it's truly a great event if for justice. as far as I'm concerned anyway, as far as a lot of people are concerned, including over 3,000, you know, American families. But it's an honor to know Rob O'Neill. It's an honor to have met some of the people that have been on that. That deployment, that mission, and to hear it come from some of it, the declassified versions. It's truly outstanding that we have men and women, as in the CIA agent, who was definitely held her own in very bad places to get the intel that she did, and demand to be listened to. That mission would have never happened. So my thanks there. It's 4:52 here at WILK. We'll be back. Welcome back to the Rob O'Donnell Show on WILK News Radio. It's 4:55 here. And I got a text message that Rob O'Neill didn't use an M4. Yeah, I know that. He used a Heckler & Koch 416, which also shoots a 5.56, which shoots the same rounds of an M4. Most of the listening audience wouldn't understand what a Heckler & Koch 416 is, so an M4 is a little more general and still fit the profile. So, but text messages keeping me in check. I get it. And somebody asked who was she. It's really unknown specifically who she is. She was a CIA agent who was tasked with finding bin Laden. There was an entire team, but there's a couple of names thrown out there, but nothing's been confirmed nor denied on who specifically it was. So a little more information there. So York, Pennsylvania, a couple of weeks ago, we had that, February 22nd actually, we had that emergency room hostage shooting situation where an officer was killed. It turns out that that officer was killed due to friendly fire in a return and in exchange of gunfire. Nonetheless, it's still due to this mad person who went in there and shot people and took hostages. And one of the responding officers fired at him with a shotgun. Some of the shrapnel from that shotgun struck this officer, ended up taking his life. Tragic situation in this kind of scenario, but when you're in close quarters and there's an ongoing gun battle, sometimes, unfortunately, you know, that's the case. Not that it's should be avoided at all costs. Obviously, it should be. But in an imperfect world and imperfect situations where you have split-second decisions being made and life or death going on all around you, unfortunately, sometimes this is the collateral damage when something like that happens. But it just goes to show that these are thoroughly investigated. Anytime there's a police shooting like this, especially with the death of an officer and the death of a suspect here, but it just goes to show how dangerous the world is. It just goes to show that, we talk about situational and awareness here all the time, and a hospital emergency room, you're there caring for a sick loved one or sick yourself or injured or hurt. You know, the last thing you're expecting is to someone barge in with a firearm and start shooting people and taking hostages. It just goes to show, a 12-year-old kid going to the store to get snacks for a movie night with friends probably isn't expecting to be shot in the chest by a 14-year-old or 15-year-old. Situational awareness. We talk about it all the time. We talk about how we need to be aware of our surroundings. You need to know where your exits are. You need to talk to, unfortunately, your kids and family, your wives, your husbands, your parents. You know, have the very real thought process that if something goes wrong, what do I do? Because I cannot explain to you the amount of times that I've literally seen people either panic or freeze. And it happens more often than not. More people are going to panic and freeze than are going to react. And it's interesting because, you know, having children growing up, and even my wife, you know, she immediately, you know, panics when something happened, and she's gotten a lot better off, being with me over the years and just learning. It creates no good. It creates no good. I remember once she was backing out of the driveway, and her mom's car was there, and she accidentally clipped her car because she was trying to miss one of the kids' toys in the driveway, and just clipped the car and caused a little dent. She came in the house I literally thought she ran over a child. That's how she came into the house. And I could not get any information out. I could not comprehend what was going on. And those minutes, if something did tragically happen, those minutes would have mattered. Those minute and a half it took me to get through to, hey, you need to tell me what's happening here because, you know, right now I don't know. I always have told my children, work the problem, don't create more problems. And that's something that I've lived by, and that's something that I'm going to pass on to you. You know, if you're in a crisis situation, work the problem, don't create more problems by panicking, by freezing, by doing unnecessary issues. It's 5 o'clock here at WILK. We'll be back.